Welcome to A New Prescription, where we explore modern healthcare, cutting-edge medical research and technology, and the complexities of healthcare politics. Join us as we provide insights and solutions to help you navigate the American healthcare system.
Hey, everybody, welcome to A New Prescription. We have another dynamite episode today. We're going to discuss acupuncture, but we're going to discuss it with a physician who learned acupuncture after he became a Western physician. He is also someone who is very close to us, particularly to our guest introducer today, Dr. Eugenie S. Kleinerman. Dr. Kleinerman was the head of pediatrics at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston from 2001 to 2014. She continues on the faculty doing research. She was also the chair of the faculty senate recently with a very successful tenure. And most importantly, Dr. Kleinerman is my wife. So Dr. Kleinerman, take it from there.
Actually, most importantly, she's my mom.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks, Lynn. Hi, listeners and viewers. I'm delighted to be a part of today's podcast as we explore acupuncture and the role of Eastern medicine in today's healthcare. So why am I here? Well, Andrew and Lynn are constantly talking about topics they think will be of interest to you and important for you to be aware of. So frankly, acupuncture was my idea. I was taught nothing about complementary medicine, vitamin or other supplements, acupuncture, or specialized diets in medical school or during my residency and fellowship. I'm a pediatric oncologist and sometimes was asked by parents, what about this supplement? Is it okay for me to give this vitamin to my child? Is there a special diet we need to follow? I had no answer and usually ended up getting a consult from the dietitian with little follow-up on my part, I'm ashamed to say. A very close family member was diagnosed with lung cancer. She was physically fit, thin, and a non-smoker. She didn't respond to chemotherapy and started to get acupuncture. She described to me how much better she felt, how relaxed it made her feel, how it improved her overall sense of well-being, and how it lessened her pain. How is this possible, I asked myself. And there it sat in my brain for years. I am on the Duke Medical School Alumni Council. And one of the things that we do when we first meet is go around the room and introduce ourselves and what we do. This is where I met today's guest, Dr. Dimitri Papadopoulos. He introduced himself as a primary care physician, semi-retired, who is now doing acupuncture. My ears perked up, and of course, I made sure that I sat at his table for lunch, where I grilled him on the talk of acupuncture and why he transitioned that way. I was absolutely fascinated by his story, what motivated him, and how he blended acupuncture and complementary medicine into his primary care practice. And of course, I invited him to be our guest on A New Prescription. Dr. Dimitris Papadopoulos is a graduate of Dartmouth College and Duke Medical School. He did an internship in pediatrics, a residency in family medicine, and was a primary care physician for 37 years in South Carolina. Later in his career, he completed a fellowship in integrative medicine and also studied acupuncture. He is board certified in family medicine, integrative medicine, and medical acupuncture. Welcome, Dimitri, to A New Prescription.
Thank you. Thank you for the very nice introduction.
So, Dimitri, you are a physician trained in Western medicine. First, please tell us what is acupuncture and why you wanted to add acupuncture to your medical practice.
Yes, well, just like you, Jeannie, I did not get any exposure to integrative medicine, acupuncture, supplements or anything through medical school, through residency, and through most of my practice. And I call my life experiences just recently as my late life crisis. At the age of 62, I started studying integrative medicine with Dr. Andrew Weil at the University of Arizona. And through that, I became very fascinated with energy medicine, the concept of energy medicine. And a few of us in the fellowship said, we'll go study acupuncture. So I then after finishing the fellowship, I studied acupuncture with a physician, Dr. Joseph Helms, who has trained over 8,000, maybe 9,000 physician acupuncturists throughout America. So that's the continuation of my education. So you asked, what is acupuncture? Do you want me to answer what acupuncture is?
Yes, and why
Okay.
you wanted to add it to your practice.
Okay. Well, first of all, I had a very beautiful practice in family medicine. Can't deny it. But then toward the end of the practice, started getting a little burnout, started to feel like, all I would do is just prescribe medicines and I'd have repeat performances with patients, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterolemia. And at 3 months later, they'd come back with the same diagnoses. I'd prescribe the same medications. And then they'd come back 3 months later and did the same thing. And it got, very routine. And I found myself, lacking. And all I was doing was prescribing medicines. So I felt like Western medicine wasn't really doing everything for patients that it should have been doing. It was doing a lot of great things, and it continues to do a lot of great things, but it's lacking in many ways. So this was a perfect capstone. This continued education had been a perfect capstone of my career in family medicine and internal medicine and so forth. You learn as much as you can about the human organism. And this in family medicine, I had to learn about everybody, children, adults, and elderly. And this allowed me to learn more about the human organism. And so the acupuncture has been great. It's been a very fascinating experience for me to keep doing it.
So
So
many
how
of
would
our listeners may not know what acupuncture is. So can you give us a little description of what is involved in acupuncture?
So acupuncture is a technique, and in America we call it almost a surgical technique, but it's a technique that's been used around the world with needles, where you put tiny needles, which are almost painless. There's a little discomfort when they go into the body to treat disorders. And the Chinese philosophy is that the human is both a combination of a spiritual body and a physical body. And the Chinese look at our physical, our chem, I'm sorry, our spiritual body as a bunch of meridians, energy channels that are going through the body, starting from the toes and going through the extremities into the trunk and into the head and then coming back down and going through all the extremities. So there, to them, the spiritual body was energy channels. And there are many, many energy channels, 12 primary meridians. The energy channels are called meridians. And that they believed in this life force called chi, which is energy life force. Now, in America, I don't know what we call it. Maybe we call it life force, but we know it dies. We know it leaves because when you die, you don't see any energy in that person. They're gone. But the Chinese believe that we have this. And I think most of us believe there is an energy force with us. The Greeks called it pneuma, and the Indians called it prana, and Chinese call it qi. So the qi travels through these channels, and they believed when the energy channel, when the qi becomes blocked in the spiritual body, the physical body becomes ill. And so we use acupuncture to go into the body and contact the meridians, the spiritual component, and unblock the energy and allow the energy to flow smoothly and help the person's illness or to keep the person from becoming ill. Pain is blocked energy, blocked qi. So we use acupuncture and specific protocols for chronic pain syndromes, and place the needles in those meridian channels to unblock the energy and help people get better and to help their pain.
So, can you tell us a little bit about the significance of where you place the needles and how you decide where to place them for each patient, since I assume it's not random?
Yes, it's most definitely not random. So the Chinese believe that we had all these different organs physically. We have the liver, we have the heart, we have the spleen, and there are meridians correlating directly to those organs. And the Chinese believe that we have, that our organs have physical characteristics and spiritual characteristics. For example, our heart is the emperor of all the organs in the body, according to the Chinese. And the heart is our shin, which is our spirit. And when you look at somebody in their face, as we as physicians have gone into the room, and we'll see people that are so depressed, and their shin, their physical appearance in their face is so low and diminished, you almost get depressed yourself. That's the shin. And then you'll go into a room, or you'll see people that are just dynamic, and they are, the charismatic, and presidents and war leaders and religious leaders have that incredible shin. And that's related to the heart. And actually, it's also related to the kidneys going to the heart. It's very complicated. But anyway, so we learn these diagnostic components about the different organs. So we will do a little bit of a physical diagnosis, which is very interesting. In Western medicine, which is amazing, you and I and Lynn, when we go into a patient's room, we'll check the radial pulse at the wrist of somebody. So we check one pulse. The Chinese doctors check 12 pulses. They check six in each wrist, and they are the kidney, liver, heart, small intestine, bladder, gallbladder. There are 12. There are 12 pulses that we check for the spiritual aspect and also the physical aspect of the person's body. So if somebody actually, I had a patient yesterday. He was a physician, and his bladder pulse was weak, and he told me before that he had some overactive bladder symptoms, and sure enough, his bladder pulse was a little bit weak. And you can make diagnoses related to people, lung conditions, different sorts of things. So we use the 12 pulses, and then if you find problems with those meridians related to those organs, then that will be a start for you in treating the patient. So, for example, am I going too fast, or is that okay?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you for an example, so perfect.
So, for example, a person with back pain. Well, back pain is there are different kinds of back pain, and there are different meridians involved with back pain. But the typical back pain meridians start with the kidneys, go to the heart, small intestine, and then go down the bladder. The bladder meridian goes down from the back of the head posteriorly all the way down the back of the neck and down the entire back down to the sacrum and down the legs down to the thighs and the calves and end up in the ankles and go to the toes. So when we do treatment for back pain, we insert needles in those meridians along the bladder meridian, and we hopefully unblock the energy going down those bladder meridians. And it for some people, a lot of people, it works, So then the other thing, you also not only do you treat the meridians of the specific organs, a specific problem that you might find, but you might also treat with another needle in another meridian that might be in the foot or might be in the hand, or it might be in the neck or it might be in the arm. So you learn these different points. It was a challenging. It was almost, when I started acupuncture, we had to learn about 300 acupuncture points, and it was like going on the first week of internal medicine for me when I was a medical student. It was so overwhelming. But you learn the points, you learn the characteristics, And then we learn protocols through our training. There are different kinds of protocols to help back pain. There are different protocols to help migraine headaches. There are different protocols to help psychological problems, depression, anxiety. So we learn these protocols that are related to the meridians and related to the body.
Tell me about how you integrate the tongue as a diagnostic tool in acupuncture, because that seems rather unique to me.
Yeah, it's unique. And to a Western trained doctor, how many times do we focus on the patient's tongue when we see somebody in the office? That's rare unless they maybe have thrush or they have a symptom of burning in their mouth or a lesion or something. So the tongue is actually a microsystem of the body. You can see the center of the tongue has is where the heart is, the emperor. And then on the side, you've got the liver. And at the tip, you've got other things, and you've got the kidneys in the back of the tongue. And then you get these, the tongue can be swollen. The tongue can have coating. The tongue can have a white coat. The tongue can have a yellow coat. The yellow coating is fire and something, there's a yang problem, a fire aspect of the person's body. A white coat is a colder yin aspect of things. And you can tell certain types of deficiencies by looking at the tongue, different kinds of qi deficiency, spleen qi deficiency, you can sometimes diagnose by looking at the tongue. It's swollen, it's scalloped, and it may have a white coat on it. So it's a very fast, I mean, it takes years and years of study. Your acupuncture treatment, the studies, you start and you can do a lot, but it's a continuous cumulative learning that goes on for a lifetime.
Has Western science ever tested the efficacy of acupuncture in an objective way to show what conditions it is most useful for?
Yes, so Western science, Western science just kind of turned off these complementary and alternative treatments a few hundred years ago. And unfortunately or fortunately, they focused on what they call the scientific medicine, the scientific method with the data and controlled studies and so forth. Acupuncturists and alternative medicines were looked upon as quacks. In fact, I used to think those guys were quacks too. I didn't understand that as well. But in recent years, very interesting, I call it a God thing. God's kind of spitting out this actual information for us to learn more. Doctors have become a little bit more and more interested in this, and they're seeing results that they didn't understand, and a lot of them still don't understand, but they're seeing people responding to acupuncture treatments. For example, back pain, the back, there is a lot of evidence now where medical physicians and acupuncturists, lay acupuncturists, have done studies to show that treatment for back pain does work in a certain population, in certain populations, and that there are studies now all over the world done by physicians. They're done, there are control studies where they treat with active acupuncture and what's called sham acupuncture, and that actual acupuncture works, and that in fact it has become so successful that Medicare is now covering chronic back pain, not caused by other problems like cancer or broken bones or something like that. Medicare will cover actually the treatment of acupuncture for chronic low back pain. So they're coming along. Medical society, and actually, as an established physician in my community, I knew all the doctors. I know them all because I referred to them many, many years. So, and it has helped them to know me, and they'll send me patients. Orthopedists will send me patients now. And, it's not universal how people will believe in it. But one other fascinating way, which is down you guys' lines, is the treatment with acupuncture for problems with cancer therapy. So there are good studies now that show that cancer that acupuncture can help dry mouth syndrome from radiation treatment. It can help peripheral neuropathy from chemotherapy. It can help see the dry mouth, the chemotherapy, and hot flashes for
Nausea. I think it works for nausea and vomiting as well.
nausea and vomiting. Yes.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how it's used in behavioral and neurologic conditions, because you told us about that when we talked before, that acupuncture has a role to play in things like trauma and anxiety.
Yes, absolutely. So when I first started my acupuncture training, I retired from my practice at age 66, and I started opening an acupuncture practice. And one of my colleagues in the American Academy of Medical Acupuncture was the head of pain management at the VA hospital here in Charleston. And he said, "Dimitri, I'm so swamped, I'm going to send you patients. I'm going to send you veterans." So he filled my practice up with veterans, and I feel like I had a 3-year residency of acupuncture with all these highly complicated veterans, beautiful people. But they had PTSD, they had drug addiction, they had high level disc disease. They had, one young captain was in his 30s, and he was captain of a platoon, and he had to watch three of his kids, hit three of his soldiers be killed by IEDs, and they come back with PTSD and so forth. So, and many were depressed. Many veterans are depressed. So we have protocols. Now, one thing I didn't mention is another kind of acupuncture that we do in the body is actually auricular acupuncture, ear acupuncture. And the ear is a microsystem of the entire body. You've got the head here, the spine, you've got the upper extremities, the lower extremities, you've got all the organs of the body. You've got the heart, you've got the kidneys, you've got the liver. So very trained acupuncturists can look at an ear and make diagnoses. There was a beautiful woman from France, a Russian lady who teaches ear acupuncture all over the world. She could look at people's ear and say, "Man, you might have a prostate problem." It turns out maybe the person has prostate cancer or a lung problem in the lung part of the ear, and they may turn out to have either TB or a lung condition. So for the behavioral problems, the brain is represented, and the head is represented, the lower part of the ear also. So when I do treatments for behavioral emotional problems, I will do a protocol, which they call auricular trauma program, where we hit the needles on the hippocampus, the amygdala, the let's see, different parts of the body. There also are some spiritual points on the body, but we hit central nervous system points in the body, which are responsible for pain modulation and also emotional modulation. The hippocampus is a very important part for emotions and memory, and the hypothalamus, the amygdala. So we have a protocol that I start with that, and then I'll do body treatments. There's a beautiful protocol on the top of the head where we hit an acupuncture port, Governor Vessel 20, and surround it with other needles for anxiety. And then there's a point right here in between the two eyes, which is helps depression and helps emotional things. And then there what's very interesting, and I've seen this actually happen in the toes, in the feet, between the first and second digits, the big toe and the second toe, right at the very web of the first and second digit, there is a point called liver 3. And that is a highly active point, which is responsible for anger, which attributes of anger. Our spirits have, normally we get angry, you get angry enough to act properly on something, but you might get too angry and carry anger for a long time. Well, this point helps anger, and I've had people say, "My anger has improved," and it's a very calming point too. So, I mean, it's very, I personally don't have controlled random controlled trials, but I see how people can benefit. So the emotional stuff, people will get calm. There's a point in the arm, which is heart three, right here in the antecubital area. That's a very calming point. There's another area right here called heart seven. The heart, is your shin and your spirit. Well, that's a very important point for anxiety and calms people down. And you can do acupressure too. You may hear about women who have morning sickness. Right in this point is the pericardium six, which is a very important point that calms down the heart, rhythm problems, calms the heart down, and also calms the stomach down. And women will do acupressure on themselves when they're having morning sickness during their pregnancy, or if they get to,
Going
anyways.
back, to the behavioral part, how long, like if a veteran came in for PTSD, how many sessions or how much time will it take for them to see like really strong benefits from the acupuncture?
Yes, that's a good question. So the person, what I like to do is I'll treat them the first time, and if they have an active problem, I will go like weekly treatments for 2 to 4 weeks, and then I'll tell the patient, I say, "We'll just see how you do. Let's try it. Let's do it aggressively weekly, and in 4 weeks, if you don't get anywhere, you can fire me. You can do whatever you want to. You don't need to come back." But then if when as you get some treatment improvement in your treatment, then you will back off. So maybe the next treatment after 4 will be 2 weeks after that. And then after that, if they're doing better or with back pain or their emotional stuff, 4 weeks down the line. And you kind of treat it, every 2 to 4 to 6 weeks. And then if they become very, very well, then we do a little maintenance thing where maybe like they might come in every 3 months or every 6 months for maintenance treatments, or they'll disappear, never see them again.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about how it works when you work with a Western physician and you use your Eastern practices on a given patient. Let's say for a moment the patient came through the physician's office. Do you always make sure that a physical exam has been done, that the appropriate Western tests have been done, so that you can integrate that into what you give the patient with acupuncture?
Absolutely. I mean, I am a stickler because I'm a primary care doctor. I want the patient to have had an adequate medical workup. So if you come to me, now maybe some acupunctures are going to be different, but if you've had chronic back pain for several weeks and want me to treat you, then I will expect that you've been adequately worked up and had an MRI to make sure we know what the anatomy is, make sure you don't have metastatic cancer. Had a lady that called today, asked if I treated small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And my wife is my receptionist, so conveniently. So she said, "Do you want to see this person?" She said, she asked it, "What can you help? Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth." And I said, "Well, yeah, I think the symptoms can be helped by it." And then I asked, I said, "Well, is she getting any treatment for it?" And she didn't really know. And I said, "Well, please tell her that I'll be happy to see her and treat her symptoms, but I would expect and want her to be treated medically for her small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, because uses of antibiotics and all those sorts of things." So, I'm not going to treat people. And there are handfuls of people that can despise the traditional medical system and come in and want to be treated for some of their problems. And they have not been adequately evaluated. So I expect all my patients really to have a primary care physician and to be monitored.
How easy is it in the United States now for someone to find a reputable acupuncturist, and how would one go about doing that?
Yeah. Well, there you can drive from my house to the beach. And you can, drive by 7 acupuncture practices. There are practices all over the America. I'm sure there are tons in Houston, and I know there are tons in Austin. And there are lay acupuncturists, which have a different kind of training, and then there are physician acupuncturists. With physicians, we call it medical acupuncture. With the lay people, they take studies where they get a master's degree in Chinese medicine, Oriental medicine, and they learn the philosophies, and then they learn needle techniques. And you can get a master's degree after college, or you can go straight to college and get a master's degree over 4 years or 6 years. And you can get a doctorate in Oriental medicine. So there are different types of people that do acupuncture treatment, and many of them do very beautiful treatment. There's a lady in my community that I've got to know who's a lay acupuncturist. She's did a beautiful job in her treatments, and she comes to me, and actually I do acupuncture for her. But they're different. But in order, the way you can find one, now if you want a medical doctor, there is the American Academy of Medical Acupuncture. It's called medicalacupuncture.org. So you can go to that website, which is kind of is founded by my mentor also, that the American Academy of Medical Acupuncture, and you can find list of doctors in your state that do acupuncture. Now, in my state, there are only three or four doctors listed, but they come in and out. In Texas, there are many,
There are also Chinese doctors who are doctors from China, but not necessarily doctors from the United States who have acupuncture practices as well.
Yes, and there are also Chinese doctors who are acupuncturists and medical doctors in the United States, which is very fascinating. And one of my favorite guys in acupuncture is from Taiwan. He's a professor of pediatric anesthesiology at Harvard, and he's a professor there. And he's one of my favorites. He grew up in Taiwan. He speaks with an Asian accent, and he's a beautiful person in an acupuncture. He's got a headache clinic in Boston at Harvard for children, and he does pediatric anesthesia.
And what about we didn't touch upon the other thing that's commonly in an acupuncturist's office, which are the herbs.
Yeah.
How does that work? Because we, from a Western point of view, we're used to medicines, vitamins, but not usually herbs. Where has that come from, and how is that used in Chinese medical practice?
Yes, so that's a loaded question, but herbal medicine is integral in these lay acupuncture studies of Oriental medicine, and they learn in depth. The herbs are felt to unblock energy like the needles do, and they will facilitate the flow of qi. And then if you have a yang problem where you're overactive and hot, then you can have cooling herbs. If you have a problem in the ancient Chinese profession, ancient philosophy, that's cold nature, they give you warming herbs. But my training in herbal medicine came from my integrative medicine training. And in medical acupuncture, we don't delve into the herbal treatment, but in integrative medicine, where I studied with Dr. Weil at the University of Arizona, we studied herbal medicine. For example, I use a lot of turmeric on my patients. Now, as you all know, there are studies done on turmeric to be as a ca cancer chemotherapeutic agent. But turmeric is being shown to be anti-inflammatory. So when I started learning integrative medicine toward the end of my practice, most of my arthritic patients, I would say, get some turmeric and take it, every day. And, a certain percentage of them said it's great, it works. Some people it doesn't work. But there are agents for sleep. There's valerian, not Valium, but valerian, the herb that can help sleeplessness. And there are a lot of herbs that can help mental issues and calm people down. And omega-3 fatty acids are supposed to help a lot of problems. They're anti-inflammatory, and they can help ADD. They can help and inflammatory things all over the body. So we learn a bit of herbal medicine through integrative medicine.
What was your first experience with acupuncture as a patient?
During the training, actually, because I had never thought about it. I'm just a little Greek kid that grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I never heard any of this stuff, and went to Duke Medical School, and they never talk to me about that stuff. So I really was introduced to it by the Fellowship in Integrative Medicine. Did introduce us to Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, different medical healing modalities around the world. And we got a brief introduction to auricular acupuncture with the fellowship. And then, but I never really experienced it until I became a student and we would practice on each other.
Okay. I guess one of the things, it's still a bit of a mystery to most Americans of what acupuncture does, what it's good for, whether they should try it. And you have a website of your own, and we'll let you tell us about what that is. And how might people look into this if they're interested? What's the next step for somebody who wants to look into the use of acupuncture?
Yeah, so I do have a website called Mount Pleasant Integrative Medicine.com, Mount Pleasant Integrative Medicine.com, one word, .com. And it explains what I do. And it also, I've got some little links that talk about what is acupuncture. And in fact, I kind of get it from the American Academy of Medical Acupuncture. There are these little educational links that will tell you what acupuncture does, what it treats, what you can treat, and so forth. So I would say if somebody has a chronic condition that has been adequately evaluated by their physician and that they're getting treatments for, if they're not getting better, then get in touch with somebody and talk about that. Now, there are a lot of, as y'all know, now there is a lot of literature that talks about how inappropriately people are being treated for mild depression with these SSRI drugs, and that probably 80% of the people that are being treated, and I'll raise my hand, I was responsible. I treated tons of people with SSRIs, another drug-oriented treatment, for depression or anxiety. I tried to be very careful not to get them hooked on, control drugs, but SSRIs are not controlled, but they are addictive. You can't just stop an SSRI if you've been on it for a while, because you'll go into withdrawal, and the patients will tell me, say, "Oh my God, I stopped my antidepressant, and I know I must need it because I stopped it a few days ago." And it's not because they need it; they went into withdrawal. So you can. And I'm never going to stop somebody's SSRI, but I'm going to treat them for depression, and then we will talk about if they're doing better to think about tapering down. So, with chronic conditions, most definitely chronic pain syndrome, sometimes acute syndromes, migraine headaches, psychological conditions, grief, depression, anxiety, sleeplessness. Sleeplessness is a little bit hard. Actually, I've actually that woman that I was referring to earlier, she's in the academic centers in France. She's the German neurologist. She's a physician. I took a course during COVID with her, and she taught me 4 points on the ear to help taste disturbance from COVID. And sure enough, I've had improvement in patients who have had the taste disturbance from post-COVID issues or in some other issues. Now, whether or not they might have gotten better, who knows? But I mean, I've had some patients that had the problem for 8 to 12 months and come in and they've actually improved. And it's just people have to be aware that it's not a cure-all for everybody. Not everyone is going to get well with it, and you just don't know who is going to get better and who's not going to get better. But the good thing about acupuncture, rarely do you do any harm to anyone. And you're not prescribing drugs. And now there are complications from acupuncture. You can puncture a lung if the person is not well trained. You can get a pneumothorax, and if the person puts the needle, if the acupuncturist puts the needle over, that's the worst thing that can happen. People will get a little bruising. People can get, sometimes the acupuncture points are very close to nerves and the neurovascular bundle. Apparently, the active acupuncture points are very close to the central nervous system, and sometimes you'll nick the nerves as the needle goes in. They may feel a little paresthesia, but that usually goes away after 1 or 2 minutes.
Does. Well, let me ask whether Dr. Kleinerman or Andrew have any additional comments that they want to make or questions they want to ask at this
Well,
point.
I think Andrew, why you take your dog Onyx to acupuncture.
Was.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about why and whether it works?
I mean, she doesn't tell me if it works, but I think it does. So Onyx has hip dysplasia. She's had it since she was, I don't know, 2. We've diagnosed her. She's now, I'm gonna be 13. So we actually do a combination of Western and Eastern medicine for her hips. With Adequan as the anti-inflammatory agent that calms it down from a Western medicine's perspective. And then once a month, she goes and gets acupuncture on her hips. And, since we've been doing that, she hasn't slipped her, been, she used to really slip and then be really hurt and cradled. And, she's still going strong now. So, I'm a believer not just in acupuncture for humans, but I think. In my experience, it's well received in our family and our household with our dog. So,
And she's older than I am.
technically, it's true.
Oh, she is. And I think she's doing better than I am. Although we both use acupuncture. I have to say that I have received acupuncture, but from a physician who went back and trained much like you. I have received acupuncture from a lay acupuncturist, and currently my acupuncturist is a Chinese physician who specializes in acupuncture. And I have to say, he's the best so far. Really quite adept at knowing and the pulse and the tongue and the whole nine yards. Very good, mostly for back pain, and it is indeed effective. So
Did you notice the difference between the lay acupuncturist and the physician acupuncturist going back?
me?
You.
Yeah, I think that the current acupuncturist who explains the least of what he's doing seems to be the most effective at what he does.
But what about the other two? You said you had a physician who was doing acupuncturists and you had a lay person.
Both
Between those two,
good.
did you see a difference?
Annie was pretty good. We both went to Annie was pretty good.
Was good, but the person who I go to now actually trained Annie. This was Annie's teacher. And the first person I went to ever was a physiatrist, a physical medicine doctor who came back and did acupuncture. And he was quite good, actually. But it was rather new to him then. And I'm sure he's much better now than he was back in the beginning. I was one of his earliest patients. So it's like most of the other traditions outside of Western medicine, as they become integrated, they find their niche and they find their best application, much like Western medicine does with a bit of trial and error. And I don't see that there's anything wrong with that. I think that's fine. There have been controlled clinical trials with acupuncture that shows it works. The one that I remember the most was nausea and vomiting from chemotherapy. It was clearly shown to be effective with cisplatin-containing regimens. So it works. I don't think there's any question. It wouldn't have lasted this many, I don't know how many thousands of years it's been going on in Chinese medicine. It wouldn't have lasted if it didn't work. And of course, you all don't remember this, or at least Andrew certainly doesn't, but the first I ever heard of acupuncture is when James Reston, a famous columnist for the New York Times, accompanied Richard Nixon to China in 1972, and he needed an appendectomy. And his anesthesia in China was acupuncture. Made the front page of the New York Times.
Yes, no, and there's a very famous physician. He just passed away, Richard Nemesow, in the army. He was an army officer. He's a radiation oncologist, and he brought in auricular therapy, and he created the concept called battlefield acupuncture, where you put four needles in the ear. If a soldier is injured out in the field, a trained person will put four needles in the ear in those areas that I was referring to earlier, and then that will help the pain and help stabilize them to get to a higher level of care. And in fact, last year before he passed away, he died in his 80s. He was going to NATO to present, that to the NATO group as well.
Fantastic. Well, Dmitry,
I mean,
anything
we'd
you
be remiss not to talk about the financial component to all this, especially on this podcast. I'm wondering, Dmitry, what's been your experience talking with the insurance industry? I know, like, for my insurance, I have someone coverage for acupuncture, my wife does, but I'm not sure it's pervasive in a lot of insurance policies. Are they adopting this idea that, to shrink their costs, preventative medicine like acupuncture should be covered?
You would think that they would, and many insurance companies do, like yours, and the federal employees have a plan that covers acupuncture. Usually, the acupuncture reimbursement is very minimal. It's not very minimal. It's not oftentimes it's not what you would charge in the office, and you don't make a lot of money in acupuncture in the first place, but. The reimbursement, and that's been a little bit of a thorn in my side because Medicare will reimburse for low back pain, but actually just this year they started increasing the reimbursement, but as last year it was terrible, so actually I had to remove myself from Medicare, and so that I could pay my expenses and so forth to have my practice of acupuncture because of the reimbursement. I wasn't gonna, I invested in myself a lot to learn the technique and for the studies, and I wasn't gonna give it away. I told my wife, I said, I'm not gonna give this away. But it's not that expensive. I mean, I don't mind. Do you want me to tell you how much I charge? You want to know that, or is that appropriate?
Sure.
Okay, so for a first visit, when somebody comes in to see me, it'll be $150, and I'll spend an hour with them, and sometimes longer than that. But usually the first visit is going to be around I try to make my visits about 45 minutes to an hour. So it's a $150 first visit because I've got to get a good history. And then when they come in for follow-up, I'll charge anywhere from $120 to $130, depending on if I use electrical stimulation with the acupuncture. So that's it for me. And people will come in, it'll be a 45 to minute to 60 minute visit. So it's not a ton of money. I'm not becoming a millionaire doing that. And it's not that expensive for the patient to come in.
And how much do you know how much is covered by the insurance if they have
I'm
insurance?
sorry.
Do
What
you
was
know how much of that 120 is covered by the insurance? I know it's going to vary plan to plan, but for average for your patients.
50 to maybe 80%. Now, when I was doing acupuncture for 3 years for the VA, they reimbursed me exactly what I charged, and it was great. And then all of a sudden, about 3 years down the road, they sent me a letter and say, well, right now we've changed our fee schedule, so we're going to reimburse you what Medicare pays for acupuncture. And it was 40% of what I was charging, what they were paying for me. And I had to kiss them goodbye. I said, I'm sorry. I mean, it hurt me because I was get benefiting, and I think the patients were benefiting, but I just had to kiss the VA goodbye. So I don't do it anymore. Now they're trying to get more acupuncturists. I got some recent correspondence that they want to have more acupuncture. So, and I don't know what their reimbursement is. I do know that Medicare increased it a little bit to probably about maybe 60 or 70% or something of what you would charge.
And
Yeah.
do the acupuncturists have a platform, like through a lobbyist group, like the AMA does, that you've seen, that they've worked for? Like, how can people or physicians like you make sure that's being heard in Washington?
Yeah, our American Academy of Medical Acupuncture has committees that do work and try to communicate with the state boards of medical examiners and with the in Washington and so forth. And the lay acupuncturists do have their organizations as well. And sometimes our organization teams up with them to try to encourage more reimbursement, to encourage more insurance companies to cover it, and more are covering it. I'd have to say, which is good. More and more are
Yeah.
covering.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that intel.
Sure.
Gene, did you have another question? I think you on mute.
She's on mute.
Sorry. No. So, yeah, I sort of do. So, Dimitri, you started out as only doing Western medicine, and then you blended it. Did this change your approach to a new patient coming into the office? Did it change how you thought about how you're going to treat them or things like that? Because clearly
Well,
it's two different philosophies that from what you've described.
right, exactly. Well, for one thing, I get to spend time with my patient. I spend an hour with my patient. Can you believe that? Was I able to do that as a family doctor? 10 to 14 minutes, and I had to get the hell out of Dodge and go to the next room, And unless they were coming for a physical, which those were limited and time constrained too. So first thing that's changed for me is I can spend time with my patient, and of course it has opened things up. And I think I've always been tuned in to the patient in terms of their, non-physical symptoms a lot over the years, but I didn't really have enough time to deal with them. Depression and dealing with people's issues, their family issues, and the counseling, it just was very hard to counsel somebody in 10 minutes. So, the quickest, easiest thing you can do is prescribe an SSRI and go their way, which is, my opinion now, malpractice. But so it has changed the approach. I think the most beautiful thing about it, though, is for me personally, I don't think this helps patients or not, but it's helped me understand the human being. I've learned so much more about the human being, how they live and suffer and experience their lives through the through broader concepts.
Excellent. Andrew, you always have the final word.
No, it's you. You have the Dimitri has the final word. Do you have any last thoughts for our viewers before we depart?
Well, I think if you have a chronic condition, and if you're suffering, or if you're having issues that won't go away, and you've had adequate medical treatment, look at acupuncture. It may help. You can't predict who it's going to help. And but most of the time, I find it very fascinating when people come in with a specific problem that they want me to treat. I may not really help that particular problem that they come in for, but the large majority of them will say that, you know what, you've really helped me in other ways, So you may not have helped this, but you've helped me in other ways. So people do benefit from it.
Well, that my family member, that was the thing that really struck me. It seemed to lessen her pain and her sense of suffering,
Yes.
which really brought joy into her life, despite the fact that she was not responding. So.
Yeah, I had a recent experience with a tragic young lady who was 39 years old and died of metastatic breast cancer. And she was a physician, a psychiatrist, and I treated her during the last 6 months of her life. And it was very tragic, and she had multiple treatments. And the triple whammy was her sister died, who was a physician, I think 100 days before her breast cancer, and her mother died of pancreatic cancer. So she was coming to see me, at which time her treatments were failing, and she was getting mega chemotherapy. She failed all the immune treatments and so forth. So it was very tragic. She'd come in, and it's right when she started her massive chemotherapy. I watched her lose her hair over a few months, And she would come in, and I would do the acupuncture. I treated her for PTSD because patients who have cancer have a post-traumatic syndrome, a post-traumatic disorder. And she came to me and would come, and I call it getting people into the zone. We put the needles in, we give them meditative music, and I get them through a heart meditation, which is a very beautiful meditation, working through the heart. And she told her husband, she said the only time she ever really felt well was when she would come to see me, because she was at peace, like you're saying, Jeannie, with your family member. And she would sleep well that night, and then that was were very peaceful times. Now she died just a few weeks ago, but I think I helped her. She told me I helped her, and her husband told me that I helped her.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Dimitri, we can't thank you enough for educating us and all our listeners once this goes out on the airwaves. And we'll let you know when that happens.
Yeah.
It'll be probably in the next week or two, I hope.
I was
And
very fortunate that I sat down at the table at lunch for you. And sorry I grilled you, but it was fun. It was a
yeah,
learning experience for me.
you get
yeah.
full credit for this episode, Gene.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to share the knowledge about acupuncture for the community, because I think it can be a very helpful healing modality for people.
Thank you once again.
Thank you so much for joining A New Prescription. We're so excited that you stopped by. Please join us on our social pages at A New Prescription, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel at A New Prescription YouTube. Remember, your health is the most important thing to you. We'll see you next time.